Welcome to the first episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete from Southwest Florida. I started listening to podcasts while running several years ago. Most of these centered around running, but a few talked about nutrition. A recurring theme was that doctors did a poor job of educating patients about nutrition and certainly little about plant-based nutrition. I feel it's time to stand up and be counted as a plant-based warrior and cardiologist. It is my goal to provide informative content regarding plant-based nutrition and wellness. Tonight's guests are James and Anita Kiger. James is an educator and author trying to become more plant-based. Anita is a Reiki practitioner and executive assistant who is vegetarian looking to become plant-based. So come along with me on a journey to maximize wellness through plant-based nutrition and exercise.
Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Welcome, James Kiger and Anita Kiger. James, I guess this is our official 40-year reunion, huh? I think it's been since we've spoken.
It's pretty much so. It's great to hear from you.
Yes, I enjoyed our reconnection on Facebook, or as some people call it, the Facebook. You know, when I saw y'all were interested in plant-based diet after you read Forks Over Knives, I was really excited. I also had a chance to, you know, I Facebook stalked you like every good person would do, and saw you wrote a book, and the spark overcome burnout and reclaim your passion for teaching, and I actually downloaded and have read most of it, and it's wonderful.
Oh, thank you so much. That was a labor of love, and hopefully we'll have some more books coming up soon.
I recognized our grade school teachers as you listed them. You know, nowadays did you start out as a pastor in a church, or were you always in the school system?
No, I spent the first 10 years of my career working in the church. As a youth pastor, and I traveled and spoke to young people. And then over the next 6 years or so, then I actually pastored a church on my own. And now what we do is we have a home, we don't really call it a church, but we have a home gathering of people that meet in our home every Sunday. And it's more laid back and not so rigid, and we have more opportunity to interact, and it's more face-to-face, and, you know, you add a lot of different components to it other than just sitting in a service listening to somebody else. It's a lot more interactive.
Do you go back to Mount Moores very often?
I'm actually heading out there on Sunday. I'm taking my son out. He is going to be actually gainfully employed by Joe R. Pyle Auctions, and so he's going to be moving back out to that area, and he's really excited, and yeah, so I go out probably four or five times a year.
And for our listeners, that is Mount Morris, Pennsylvania, in the most southwest corner of Pennsylvania, right on the Pennsylvania-West Virginia border. You can get there by walking very easily, even if you're not in shape, correct?
That is correct.
As I remember, yeah, so 44 kids, grades 1 through 8. I think, you know, I started talking or thinking about it. I think probably about 6 of us went to college. Certainly others were very successful, such as Joe. You know, we all grew up on kind of eating the same thing. There wasn't much ethnic diversity back there. It was pretty much the high-fat, high-comfort food of probably English-Irish for the most part, English-Irish-German descent, don't you think?
I would think, yeah. Had to have meat, had to have potatoes, and loaded in butter, and cooked to death. And yes, that's how we all grew up, I believe.
I think, yeah, the only thing that probably saved some of the population is that you couldn't get to a fast food without driving 10 miles. And, you know, again, back then, people raised their own animals and had big gardens. I remember your dad had a huge garden in his backyard. My grandmother had a huge garden, and we pretty much ate all summer what came out of the garden. So I think even though it was somewhat of a high-fat diet, at least it was certainly GMO-free, chemical-free, so to speak.
Absolutely.
I also notice when I go back there that the population is becoming larger. I go back, my daughter's at WVU and actually stays in a little place that my parents, right there in Mount Morris where I grew up, actually. And
okay.
So I run when I go back. I run up Shannon, Bacon and round little Shannon and back down around the cemetery and the churches. And I think of all the times I've been back there running, I've seen one other person running, and he wasn't from town. So it's not a very active population for any stretch of the imagination.
No, just hard work, and that's about it, you know.
Exactly.
You exercise while you're working, but that not too much else.
Exactly. I think maybe your brother was probably one of didn't he coach high school sports at some point?
He coached high school. He's actually still coaching at, he'll be 70 this fall, and he's still coaching middle school boys basketball. He's in his 45th season of being a coach.
Wow. And you played high school basketball, correct?
I did. I played basketball, and I actually played 2 years in college, but for
small
college. So yeah, that was.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
And so that's very good. And then you coach some basketball now, right?
I coached our high school girls basketball team for off and on for about 18 years, and now I coach middle school boys basketball as well. So yeah, it kind of runs in the family. And this year, I'm really looking forward to being able to actually, instead of standing and watching them, get out on the court, maybe do some things with them, since I won't be carrying around as much extra weight as I had before. So it's something to look forward to.
Now, Anita, where are you from originally?
I'm actually from right here in Dover, Delaware. Pretty much all my life moved here when I was about 9 months old, transplanted from the military.
Oh, wow. And you're a vegetarian. How long have you been a vegetarian?
It's probably been a couple of years now that I've been totally meat free. I've always kind of been a vegetarian at heart, but with five children and my husband, over the course of years where they were all carnivores, I just kind of cooked and fed them all and ate along with them, but in the back of my mind, I always wasn't really embracing eating meat. So finally, I made the switch when I was able to just say, hey, this is what I'm doing, and have not regretted it at all.
I had a similar experience. I read about 10, 13 years ago, A Diet for a New America by John Robbins. He's the son of Baskin and Robbins. I don't know if you've read that book, but basically about the factory farming and the ill effects of animal products. And so as soon as I read that book, I'm all in, 100% ready to roll. And I announced, and I assumed that my family would all convert as well immediately too, once I told them what I read. It's great news, and what are you, crazy? And so I tried it on my own, to try to stand alone for a while, and it seemed, I gradually fell back into the fold. My mother would say, aren't you going to have something? I made this, it's going to go to waste, blah, blah, blah. So it's very difficult in, I guess, what you call mixed households. My parents both got sick eventually, and I kind of became the chief cook, and that's when I declared our house plant-based. And once I declared it and, I guess stated it to the world, it seemed much easier than trying to, I'll do it when I'm home, and I won't cause a fuss and all this kind of stuff. So I've kind of found that if you're going to do it, you just kind of have to be that person that you go to dinner with that asks for everything on the side. And
that's exactly it. I especially around in this area, there's not a whole a very good assortment of dining opportunities out, and I'm very well acquainted with the sides at all of the local restaurants. But I had a major epiphany when I viewed the documentary Forks Over Knives, and at that point I said, okay, that's it. Was in my 50s and not feeling good, and started saying, okay, now I'm going to take charge of my own life and start feeding myself when I want to feed myself. And gradually, you know, the family is coming around. They are definitely coming around as they educate themselves as well and not just listen to me, but they start doing the reading and the researching and watching of the many documentaries that are out there, and they're coming to their own epiphanies.
Yeah, I think that's where it has to come from. No matter how much you can preach to somebody, it has to be their idea. James, if I might ask, a little bit personal, when did you start to lose your basketball figure?
I would say that probably around the time that my last son was born, so I'm going to say 19 years ago, I went through a lot of stressful situations and used food to help me, you know, deal with some pain and some issues and things like that. And to be honest, became addicted to it. And even though I wasn't, you know, necessarily obese, because I still have a thin body type, but I carried around, you know, obviously around my waist, a lot of that. And through the last few years of my life, I did not embrace what Anita embraced initially, because to me it was, you know, you just want to be different. You know, you're a hippie at heart. You know, here, let's go chew on a tree. You know, give me a nice cow and that type of thing. And as I began to watch with her the DVDs and the different documentaries we watched, particularly for me, the one that really spoke to me was Sick, Fat, and Nearly Dead by Joe Cross, which...
The juicer, Joe the juicer.
Yeah, you got that right. And so we really committed ourselves to juicing for a very long time, for over a year, and then just kind of got away from it just for a little while, but we're back on track with that and just doing some new nutritional cleansing. And just this is what I've noticed, Jamie, is that the absence of things that I'm taking out of my life that, you know, drew me, for example, you know, the nice smell of the steak and that type of thing, how I feel and I'm starting to feel now is so much more than the temporary pleasure of having the steak and then being bloated and, you know, all the different things that happen to you after you've eaten red meat. So it's really, you know, for me and for any listener that's listening, the biggest thing I believe it's everything is 100% mental. It's your mind. It's your mindset. It's that. And so with releasing some, you know, internal things and educating yourself and then seeing the results and the energy that you haven't had, that I haven't had for probably 15, 20 years, starting to come back, you know, that's really what changes it for me.
I often, you know, I speak with my patients quite a bit about this. I'm sold on the plant-based side. I really am sold. I've seen results. But when I bring it up, and, you know, I thought that your book was fascinating, especially the chapters on passion and, you know, restarting your passion. And I have to say that in medicine, I was becoming a little burnt out. You know, what we do is, you know, see some of the same things day in and day out, and it really, at some point, doesn't become all that challenging. We use certain medications to treat certain things. We do certain procedures, blah, blah, blah. But with this onto the plant-based diet, what you can do with diet, I became so passionate about that I wanted all my patients to you know, change immediately. And I found out really quickly that it seemed that talking about nutrition or the way people ate was a lot about calling them out on their religion or calling them out on their politics.
Yeah.
And it became the psychology of it actually did become very fascinating to me, because it is something that people take take great offense to approaching what they eat. You know, their parents ate that way, they were raised that way, their heritage is that way, and they hang on to it, you know, for, you know, without ever thinking about it, and it's crazy. And I always try to start with, you know, I grew up in West Virginia, and I butchered hogs, and, we use lard, and, you know, I know that that's, you know, but you have to change. And what do you think as far as, you know, especially where we grew up, you know, Sunday after church was fried chicken, mashed potatoes, if somebody died, it was, you know, comfort foods and bring covered dishes, and every gathering involved eating till you couldn't stand up. How was that as far as in your in Delaware or where you were a pastor? I mean, same situation. Does anything, you know, change in that way?
Well, absolutely. Jamie, you hit it on the head, because it is a very ingrained in our mental patterns and our what we draw comfort from. You know, and I believe the sense of entitlement. You know, I deserve to have this, you know, banana split. I deserve to have this steak. This is how I'm going to reward. I mean, for me, that was always a reward. I coached a great basketball game, or I'm getting ready to go to a great basketball game, so I'm going to eat, in my mind, a great meal. So I'm going to have a, you know, 12-ounce ribeye, you know, a loaded baked potato, you know, salad with blue cheese dressing on it, and then if I have a room left, maybe some banana cream pie or something like that. And then, you know, you feel you might get that moment. But the thing again that I'm learning, and Anita has learned this, is it doesn't, you know, it's a mental satisfaction, but it's not a physical satisfaction. You don't feel good after you've eaten that much. I mean, you feel sluggish. Even to the point, I've given up coffee for the next 30 days, and I've been coffee-free for 7, and I cannot believe how not, like, you grab your coffee because you're sludgy. I've woken up every morning, and I'm ready to go. I don't need coffee. I think about 10 in the morning, I say, oh, let's have a cup of green tea, just because I want something warm. But I don't crave the coffee. It's amazing to me, you know, the flip over when you get your mindset right.
Anita, you are a Reiki instructor, practitioner. Tell me about that.
I'm a Reiki practitioner, and what that is a modality of working with clients to balance their energy field and work on the various chakras, which are energy vortexes where energy flows in and out of your body, and that we're made up of energy. And that when we're stressed, when we have, you know, back problems or even chemotherapy or, you know, gallbladder issues or whatever, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, when we get bound up in those various forms, our energy flow is inhibited. And what I do is I work with my clients, and it's a very light touch healing therapy, that if you allow open up your chakras and allow the energy to flow in a fluid motion, that it allows your body to heal. It allows you to align your spirit. And it opens up your mind for mental clarity. It balances your emotions. And then in when you get to that balanced state, you are able to live a more harmonious life. And it's a great, great technique. I wish Western medicine would embrace these types of healing techniques as well, because it really does help to heal the body. It's a great experience. And I've been doing it for about a year now, and received Reiki treatments for some chronic neck degenerative disc problems in my neck, and found how much it helped me and relaxed me that I wanted to investigate it further and be a practitioner as well. And I do it out of my home.
What do you think about the energy of what you eat and how it relates to the energy of the body? Say, for instance, when we consume a cow that has gone to slaughter and been fearful, and that energy, well, and then we eat that fear energy. Do you think that has a role?
It's huge. And I try not to, you know, I say we eat murderous, violent energy, and I don't want to put that into my body. It has a huge impact. A huge impact. And that, when I became a vegetarian, it was basically because I wanted to adopt a plant-based diet. But then when I started really learning about how these animals are farmed and treated and the manner in which they are living and the just horrific torture that they endure before they're slaughtered, we do take that energy in. It's no different than when you're come in contact with somebody and you just kind of feel a vibe about them, or they're negative or they're angry, and you can feel it. And I believe that we take that in with animals as well. It's a very, very large part of what goes on inside our bodies.
James, why do you think that religion, or I'll go, maybe I'll focus more on Christianity, but why do you think that it's never brought up? I mean, you know, Noah's Ark, everything's fine and dandy, and, you know, I know the Old Testament, some offerings, and I know that there is some controversy about, you know, how some of those stories go, but it seems to me that, religion, and we talk about love and compassion, and then we go eat a fried chicken. I would think that things would have evolved more than they have. I mean, I have a secretary that, I have a patient that's doing great plant-based. I mean, he has just done excellent after having bypass and angioplasty, and he's a devout Catholic and does some of the lay ministry, and so does my secretary. And on the way out, she said, I'm sorry you can't come to our potlucks because there's nothing for you to eat. Instead of, maybe we should find something that we can all make, we can all do a little better.
Exactly. Well, Anita's fond of saying that when Adam and Eve were created in the garden, that they were vegetarians because they weren't killing, all the animals lived at peace with them, and they had the fruit of the trees, all the trees of the garden they could have ate from, and it was, a very utopian society. And this beats off the subject just a tad. I don't want to go down a rabbit trail, but when you define what we have created Christianity to be, it's very culturally normed. It's very narrow-minded. It's very, this is the way we've always done it. And I actually was going to just kind of bring this up earlier in our conversation, is that we still very much are people of faith, but we understand that energy, God created energy, and like a person that might be listening to this that comes from a traditional or a fundamentalist background would say, oh, these people have gone off the deep end and they're into this and that and the new age and all these kind of things. But what we're trying to do is just expand to say God is not confined, he's bigger. And I believe health, if you're not healthy, you can't be spiritual. If you're not of a sound mind, then you can't think properly. All these things kind of tie together. So, it's hopefully we're coming to and again, this sounds spooky, but I hope we're coming to kind of a new awakening all the way around. I know I am personally. I'm so far away from where I grew up in the sense of just not so narrow-minded, more open-minded, more seeing things, seeing God and in all of creation, and I just think it's healthy, and it helps us all to connect all across the world, no matter what religion you're in or whatever. It helps us all to connect, because that was the basis of the gospel, is to love someone else even as you love yourself. So that's something that I hope that people are awakening to. That's what we do in our home. We do Reiki in our home. We have Bible studies in our home. We enjoy, having people, and we'll have a glass of wine in our home together with people, and we just kind of gotten, away from all the things that are just kind of miscellaneous.
I wish I lived closer. I would join you.
We would love to have you. We'd love to have some of your recipes.
All right, I'll bring a covered dish and come over, and it won't be fried chicken.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic, And then what? So I guess that being a youth pastor led to another, and you became more involved in the schools. I love the part in your book where you talked about, you did the A students or the super A's, and then you did the D students, and you did the middle, and
you know, you still found that you weren't making the mass connection. It must be extremely challenging in your field. I through my daughter, I became a, you know, my basketball career ended 2 weeks after it started in ninth grade when we moved to Morgantown, but somehow I ended up being a girls basketball coach for a traveling basketball team with a bunch of 13-year-old girls at one point. And then my daughter went to school, Catholic school, and I ended up being a track coach. And, you know, dealing with it, I mean, it's quite the challenge, you know. I mean, I would prepare more for the practices and how to motivate these kids than I would, you know, be part of any work day that I had. So it must be extremely challenging.
It's very challenging, actually. One of my passions and pursuits, and I'm actually just a couple weeks away from being completely certified, is I'm taking some of my skill outside of the school setting to be a youth success coach, and just kind of working with kids on their internal motivation and why they do the things they do, what is your passion, because inside a school system, not only do you have the, you know, a lot of students that are unmotivated, but you have, you know, a democracy inside of there that thinks education should be a certain way, and things like, you know, healthy eating and how health and eating affect your mindset, and then, you know, having a positive mindset, and you know, you, as you read my book, you see it's very motivational, and I've been a student of personal growth and development for probably the last 25 years, and I just believe in that. I believe your mind really controls everything, and so now after I've preached that for 25 years, now I'm putting it into my own life. I'm trying to practice what I preach, but I have in other areas, just not in my health. But anyway, yeah, it's a challenge. So there are great young people. We've been involved with some companies where we have young people that are just absolutely, you know, on fire about having a direction for their life by producing a residual income. They want to make a difference in the world. They're making donations. They're traveling on missions trips. So there are out there, but it is hard. It's hard in a setting where teachers are being kind of squashed. Their passions are being squashed because they're filling out so much paperwork. And it, you know, that again, that's a whole nother rabbit trail. But we've got to change that mindset too. So what my goal is to take outside of school, have kids come to my own personal practice on the side, and just kind of coach them up to be what they can be, then send them back in, and hopefully they can make a difference.
Yes, I'm trying to get into the county schools here a little, because I really want to help with the health of our teachers.
Traditionally, Southwest Florida, where I live, is a retired population.
There's kind of two ends of the spectrum. They're very young, very old. It's changing because a lot of people are following their parents or coming down to take care of them, and they stay. But what I noticed when I first finished my training, I was on faculty at West Virginia University, and typically my patients were 60 to 65. There weren't very many 80-year-olds. If they were, they were in terrible condition. Then I moved to Florida, and then all my patients were 80-year-olds, and they wanted to live, and a lot of them were very vibrant. And now I'm seeing young people that have, I'm back to West Virginia ages, 50, even women, which used to be unheard of, 50-year-old women with coronary artery disease and needing stents. And a lot of it is in the teaching population, because that's a big industry in the town that I live in. It's one of the biggest employers, is the school system. And, of course, this, you know, the school lunches is just incredible. But I don't think that teachers can be happy and motivating if they're sick themselves. And I,
absolutely.
You know, and
absolutely.
They've tried to insure themselves to save, you know, to save some money. But I just really think that nutrition is where it's at. And until we get that turned around, it's a scary future a little bit.
I would agree.
Have you ever heard of the runner Ron Dixon? He won an Olympic miler, won the New York City Marathon. He was from New Zealand, but lives in San Francisco now, and he started a program in the schools. Basically, because when he was a kid, even though he's probably 60s, he was a hyperactive kid that couldn't sit in his chair, and the teachers used to, you know, come up with things to have him run across the playground to the other building to get something and kind of wore him out so he could fit in the chair. So now, as a older gentleman, he has started the kids marathon, and basically what it is in the school district, grade school kids, they tie a yellow ribbon or around a quarter mile type tree, and the kids run a quarter mile and it's long. And when they get up to 25 miles through this program, they don't count it anymore, and they have those kids go back and mentor or help the kids that maybe haven't run as fast and haven't got the 25 miles. And then the 26th mile is run together, and the finish line, they're awarded a medal, and they're awarded a medal that's a replica of one of his medals, whether it be the New York City Marathon or Olympic bronze medal. And I thought that was a fantastic program. I just heard an interview with him. When you let people be innovated, so many good things can come out of it.
Absolutely, and that's. I think there is a trend of people getting frustrated, and with this the advent of charter schools and different schools of specialty. I believe that. I really believe there is coming kind of an awakening all across in all different areas to we have to, or we're going to end up destroying ourselves. My father passed away when he was 51, and when I reached 51, I scared myself to death. And, hopefully that I could live past that age, and thankfully I have. And, I think we all need to evaluate, where we are in our lives and, really make some changes so that we can be around, because the potential to be around, people are living longer. Anita's mother is 94 and vibrant and texts
wow.
on her phone and is on Facebook and she can drive, and my mother's still living. She's 93. And
wow.
People are living longer, and both of them are in reasonably good health, and they do well. So, I'd like to be around that. Well, that would be awesome.
Do you have any plant-based options in your school cafeteria?
I think we put lettuce on our chicken sandwiches.
iceberg, correct? One week.
Yeah, the iceberg, the good old iceberg lettuce. What they have done, unfortunately, is they've just reduced portion sizes. But it's of the same food. So what's happening is you're getting less empty calories. Before, they were at least filling up on empty calories, so they would feel full, but now they're giving smaller portions of empty calories, and kids are really, really hungry, so they're having to order 2-3 lunches. And I see that happen all the time, especially some of our football players, some of the kids that are bigger, that are, need more carbs to get ready for practice and stuff. They're having to order, the portions are, I believe in portion control and certainly like that, if it's good, good food, but it's not good food and it's smaller portions, so it's kind of a double whammy on kids. I don't know that it's really accomplishing what the federal government anticipated it would.
Yeah, it's a shame that the American dairy industry and the Cattlemen's Association has such a hold on our school system. I don't know that's going to change that much. Very soon, unless, it becomes, if you don't change the parents, then the kids, they're happy for what the kids get. They don't have to feed them. What other obstacles have, so obviously if you're going to eat plant-based, you have to bring your lunch. Anita, where you work, do you also work at another job, or are you full-time Reiki practitioner?
No, I work full-time as an executive assistant to a financial planner, but it's a very small office, and my coworker is a plant-based person as well. I've been working with her for about 2.5 years, and she's younger, in her 30s, and just through our conversations and all of that, she has slowly made the paradigm shift, and so is even actually just two young boys and ridding her household of processed foods and even making her own tortilla shells and all of that. So it's really nice. So I have a coworker right there that, we are able to share a lot. So that's not difficult.
at all. And actually, and I just enrolled in a service online, which if people don't know about this, I'm just going to kind of throw it out there. It's called blueapron.com. And it's a service where you sign up and you get free meals for two people delivered, and with all the ingredients, and it's all whole foods, organic. You can choose a vegetarian meal, and it's absolutely incredible food that you make. It's a little labor intensive. You have to do a lot of chopping and cooking, and so. So I have found that with that, I've just enjoyed cooking a lot more. I think the obstacle, you know, at first was that it's expensive. You know, money is such a motivating issue, even like when you were talking about the school lunches and everything like that. You know, the Cattlemen's Association, the Dairy Association, all of that, there's deep pockets. And people think they can't afford to eat a plant-based diet, but you can. The internet is an incredible source with recipes and tips and blogs and ways to, you know, budget and all of that. And it's doable. That was the biggest obstacle, I think, that I thought that it's going to be expensive. And that's what I encounter with a lot of people is, well, it's a lot cheaper, you know, to shop in the middle sections of the grocery store versus on the perimeter. But it's not true. That's just not true.
Yes, where I live is, you know, somewhat touristy, so a lot of fish places. Of course, it's hush puppies, fried fish, fried shrimp, you know, maybe a bit of baked potato with, you know, butter, and then rib joints. So,
yes.
You know, it's very difficult to go out. Friend of mine started here in town what we call a Charlotte County Plant-Based Foodies, and basically it's a group that we meet once a month, people that want to learn about a vegan diet, lifestyle, low oil, more of an Esselstyn's, works over nice type menu, and we get together once a month. We've actually went to two local restaurants, and Linda has actually met with a chef and went over a menu, so we all go there as a group and eat, trying to get, you know, at least some menu items served on a regular basis, hoping that if enough people go, that people will, you know, put, you know, some actual vegan options on the menu as opposed to eating, you know, four sides when you try to go out with somebody. And we've even got planned Thanksgiving dinner with a local restaurant, and he's agreed to meet and, you know, go over and do a, you know, a plant-based Thanksgiving dinner for us in October. So, I mean, it's a start, and at least when you're meeting with like people, it gives the opportunity to, you know, go out a little bit. It's been, my mom's Italian, my dad was Irish, and my mom is a great Italian cook. And when we first started this, or she's like, well, I've been cooking 80 years this way, I'm not changing. And it's like, well, come on now, you know, it's just kind of plant-based alterations of your already meals. We call them, we have our go-to meals here, you know, so it might be potato soup that, you know, she's added spinach and carrots to and eliminated the milk and eliminated the butter, and it tastes, it's like, oh, wow, it just tastes like the other potato soup, and it's good, you know.
Right.
Or pizza night without the cheese, or, you know, instead of the sweet potato and pork chop, it would be sweet potato and white beans and greens. And so once you're this, or the stuffed shells with the tofu and spinach, you know, and you can't, I actually do Christmas Eve dinner here for 25 people, and it's all vegan, and you know, there are carnivores that come, but nobody realizes it or cares. Now, there is some wine to help cooker, but you know, for the most part, once you figure out, you can plant-based just about any traditional food, except for, I guess, the, you know, steak and, you know, when people come in and say they like steak and potatoes, then it becomes an issue, but it's like, okay, we'll take that potato and, you know, take the butter and sour cream off, and now we'll start again. But I do think it's, you know, it becomes, you almost have to cook, especially if you want to get healthy in your house. It's almost impossible, especially around here, to go out. You know, I think in bigger cities there's some vegan and raw options. In Sarasota, you know, about 40 miles away here, there's a couple options. But it is very difficult. And I was talking with a friend the other day, and it's like, you know, it's funny. We're so particular who our hairdresser is. We're so particular, you know, who our physician or our lawyer is. But when it comes to putting energy into our body, we'll let somebody behind closed doors in some greasy kitchen make us food without ever knowing what ingredients goes into it and eat it happily as long as it tastes good.
Well, I found that when James really started coming around, was he was concerned that he wasn't going to feel like he had a substantial meal, that if it was just going to be, you know, a salad and string beans, sautéed string beans on the side, that he wouldn't feel like that he really had a meal, especially coming from his background being a meat and potatoes person. But, I mean, I'm not going to necessarily speak for him, but I think once he found that with learning, with when I started learning really how to cook and that you can have a satisfying, fulfilling meal, plant-based meal, and you feel full when you walk away from the table. You're satiated, you enjoyed the meal, and you feel fulfilled. And, I mean, would you agree with that, James?
Absolutely. And, you know, again, when you're not trying to stuff yourself with food for emotional reasons and things of that nature, and then you can eat less as well and enjoy the taste, slow down, enjoy your bites instead of stuffing it in, wolfing it in. And so, yeah, all that pieces together, and we, Anita had mentioned Blue Apron. This is not a commercial for Blue Apron by any means, but the food that we've gotten from there, I mean, again, it's all fresh, and it's exposing us to different vegetables, different spices, different combinations, different recipes that we have never tried before, and it's been delicious, and it's been filling, and it's like, oh, my gosh, this is really good. And I guess exposing your world to all types of vegetables and things that you never thought would be. Anita makes an unbelievable thing. It's a zucchini cake that actually looks like a crab cake and is amazing, absolutely amazing tasting, and you would never, ever know the difference that it was, you know, that because she puts Old Bay on it and different things, and it tastes just like a crab cake, but it's zucchini, and it's delicious.
It does sound good. Yeah, I think sometimes when, especially guys, that, you know, I mean, you need more calories. And when, you know, people, I'll give my spiel, you know, 45 minutes of, you know, talking without taking a breath in the office. And then it's like, I don't think I can live on carrots and celery. And it's like, that never came up. I never mentioned carrots or celery. But I think that, you know, the difference is because the food is not calorically dense, you do eat more. And if you try to restrict what you eat and just eat a cup of salad, you're going to be hungry. You know, I mean, my salad looks like the salad of, you know, for a serving of, you know, four people, you know, a lot of times. And then, of course, you know, we just, it's like, well, I just don't eat salad. You know, I mean, we eat whole foods of, you know, a variety of kinds. And, you know, it's nice to look at the plate and see all the different colors. It's been fun.
I've enjoyed it.
That's true. Yeah, it's growing on me. And I'm probably 85% of the way there. And, you know, oftentimes if I'm eating with someone, you know, either my family or whatever, you know, I will take some of the things in less portion. And then the good things they have, I'll put more of that on there because, you know, it's sometimes it's just worth not having to go through the hassle of, you know, hearing about it as opposed to doing that. But there'll come a day when I won't care and I'll just eat as I want and it won't matter anymore. So I'm 52 and I'm still worried about what my family thinks. So,
well, yeah, I mean,
it speaks to my emotional issues.
Yeah, that is our culture too. I mean, you certainly not, you know, you've cleaned your plate for your mother for a lot of years and, you know, to all of a sudden say, well, you don't like what she cooks. I mean, I know my mother didn't take that very good, you know. It's we did, you know, like I said, when she got sick and I started, we went plant-based, and then I've evolved to low oil. And, you know, being an Italian, cooking with olive oil and saying, well, we don't need to use olive oil anymore, was just like, what? You know, it won't have any taste. You've taken everything about it. You know, it's like, no, the reality of it is, it's, you know,
it doesn't make that much difference. And I was quite surprised myself. You know, you can things do taste just as good. You know, it's just, again, a lot of our tradition of the way we do things. We have a similar thing here. There's an organic farm. It was a woman from University of Florida that moved her family onto a farm, and they do organic farming, and then they do a, you get a box every week. It goes like October through May, I believe. And so it's, you never know what's going to be in the box. It's just what's ready. And, you know, there were vegetables that we didn't know anything about and, you know, started making things. And, you know, it's great. And, you know, it's like, well, you wait till you get the box before you go to the store and buy anything else. And we just kind of live out of the box and make whatever. And it's been great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's like great services. And again, with this age of information, really, there's not a time when you can't get something at your fingertips as far as information, as far as recipes, just educating yourself. It's all right there. And the more I educated myself, the more I knew that my decision was the right one.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, I told my mom, you know, I said, you remember James Cogger? I said, you know, I'm going to have my first podcast recording with he and his wife. And, I we met back up on Facebook. I think, you know, everything comes full circle. And I think it's a pretty cool thing that the path that you're on and the path that you're on, Anita, it's just very interesting that, you know, we've all come back, I guess, full circle, but in a completely different circle.
Absolutely. It is neat. And again, it shrinks our world together. And, I mean, we probably would have never seen each other ever again. And we have, and now we're communicating, and it's really neat. So it's been an honor for you to have us on. We really enjoyed it and connecting. And so we definitely have to continue to do that.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, we'll have to have a check-in and see when you declare yourself plant-based to the Mount Morris community. That will be the ultimate step, correct?
absolutely. I'll probably do that from a distance so they don't stone me on my way out of town. But yeah.
When he tells his mother, it'll be official. When he tells his mother.
Yeah, that's there was a cartoon I saw, and the kid goes up to his mother and said, you know, he confesses that he's plant-based. You know, and I think that kind of sums it up. You know, I know the first year that I went plant-based, going back to Mount Morris, I think there was a family reunion of some sort, and they were just panicked to death about what I possibly could eat, you know. And it's like, don't worry about it. I'll find something. You know, you always have green beans. You always have, you know, there's always, you know, various salads. You know, I'll be fine. But nobody could understand that, you know, if you didn't have a big hunk of meat that you could possibly, you know, get full and survive for the next morning.
Absolutely.
Well, I won't take up much more of your time, but it has been a terrific evening, and I do appreciate you talking to me, and I'll want to find out more about how each of you are doing, and I hope we can reconnect and do a podcast, What Happens Later episode.
That would
Absolutely.
Be great. We'd love to do that.
All right. Nice to speak with you both. Good night.
Okay.
I hope you've enjoyed the first episode of Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. If you'd like to reach me, please email me at jamiedelaney@gmail.com. That's J-A-M-I-D-U-L-A-N-E-Y. Be healthy and enjoy the journey.